Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Carl Carlson's on the line. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred.
Hey, you know, we've been working on this reliability engineering management book for a while now, and we've both have gotten busy with all kinds of projects and fun stuff, so it's slowed down a little bit. And I don't know, when do you think we're going to, I'm going to put you on the spot, Carl. When do you think we're going to have this ready to go?
Oh, gosh, Fred, I within a couple of months.
Okay. Yeah, I hope so. You know, and it's a little leeway there since I think it's a month before this podcast goes live from when we record it. So 2 or 3 months.
Okay, let's say that.
Yeah. You know, maybe when we get to RAMS, we've got that at the end of January of 2018.
Wouldn't that be great to announce the launch?
Yeah, announce it that it's, you know, ready to go, final draft, it's in print, or it's possible we could have it printed and ready to go. So that would be cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But there's what I wanted to talk to you about today is an area that I've been struggling with in writing it. So before we get into that, let's make a little room here for an advertisement. We've been trying to run those in the podcast more often. So I'm going to give Diane, our editor, a chance to insert a podcast advertisement right here. Hi, it's Fred here. Did you know that Carl Carlson and I are writing a book on reliability engineering management? Based on the feedback and encouragement of our students and clients, we have set out to write a practical book to help you improve your next project's reliability performance and your organization's ability to create reliable products. For a limited time, the draft chapters are available for free for you to read and review. Become a reviewer of this new work at ascendoreliability.com/go/REM. All right. So now, Carl, this area that I'm having trouble writing is for this the chapter on soft skills. I think our tentative section is section or chapter 11 right now. And it's all of those things from presenting to active listening to facilitating all kinds of skills that not just reliability engineers, yet anybody that works with a group should be good at, should know how to do to be effective. Now, one of those is leadership. In my own experience as a reliability engineer, I found that I was leading groups and teams to do a root cause analysis, for example, or to propose a change to a product to make a difference. And it may be three or four of us working on that proposal. Other times I was asked to lead a team. I mean, that was the direction. Lead this team to get this done. Lead this assessment of a supplier, for example. Lead an audit group. Things like that. So some I had position power. Some I did on my own. Yet I'm struggling with writing a section in our book on leadership and the role of just exactly what is reliability leadership. And I have the experience individually, but I know there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, this is a really a topic of great depth. It spans bodies of knowledge that go well beyond reliability. Mm-hmm. And let me just talk a little bit about it. I've attended leadership classes. I know you have taken leadership courses. In reliability, we have to influence behavior,
right?
In the field of reliability, and specifically, if you want to design for reliability, if you want to go traditional test and fix type reliability, where you work on the calculations and work on the analysis. A lot of that you can do by yourself, but if you want to achieve reliability in product development timeframes that tend to be short and getting shorter, mm-hmm. and cost parameters that are tight and getting tighter, and expectations that are very high, you have to influence the behavior of the design organization. The reliability can only be achieved in the design process, which means the people that are currently designing the products and the manufacturing processes have to be influenced by the reliability professional in order to adjust their designs and manufacturing processes to become reliable. That influencing requires a certain amount of leadership skill. And that's different than a more classical role of reliability where you're sitting at your job, you're doing your job by yourself, able to calculate and able to perform certain reliability methods where you don't need to influence people as much. Mm-hmm. And so I think the reason why this becomes more important almost decade by decade is because of the transition from reliability problems solving to reliability prevention or design for reliability. That's my first thought on the subject.
Yeah. No, I think the influence part, and that's what's motivated that whole soft skills chapter in our book on engineering management, is that reliability engineers are rarely in a position of authority or power. I mean, I know plenty of reliability folks that have moved into management and into senior management roles, yet their primary focus isn't reliability at that point. It may be informed by their past experience. Yet the reliability engineers are often a part of a team that may have an engineering manager for hardware design, and that design manager may have 5 or 10 engineers working for him, where the reliability engineers appear to that group. And so they don't have a budget, they don't have headcount, they don't have a bunch of folks working for him. Now, some reliability groups may have staff and technicians and lab and failure analysts and so on. But we often don't have a position as a manager in an organization it brings up a whole discussion, though, is there's a difference between a manager and a leader. And I think
yes.
the concept we're talking about and the influence part is that we often have to set up, and this is true, I think, for any leadership role, is, what's the vision? What are you trying to achieve? What's the outcome of the set of activities or tasks or changes that you're proposing? And is that clear? Can other people see that? And then the role of the leader changes from envisioning a change and making it clear to facilitating making it happen, to finding connections and removing roadblocks and more tasks like that. Yet it's always with, here's the standard analogy is the flag at the top of the mountain kind of thing. Is it the role of influencer parallels the role of a leader in so many ways, because and we often don't have that luxury of just saying from the top down, do XYZ, report to me on Friday. So it changes it to more of an influence part where you got to make a compelling desired outcome that others trust that you know how to get there. And with their help, you can figure it out. And I think that's the core of that influence piece that reliability folks tend to, the good ones anyway, I think, excel at.
Yeah, very good. Very good points. I found personally, and I don't know about yourself, Fred, and I'd be very curious about listeners on this, is personally it's been an evolution with myself. 35 years ago when I started out in engineering, and the particularly the reliability engineering, I had a career before that, but I don't think I was an influencer. I think I was more of a doer. Go about doing the job. I'd say, what's the task? I'm going to do it. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. When you can go beyond that, tell me what to do and I'll do it, by seeing what needs to be done and clarifying roles and then stepping into those roles. So I think that's been a long, gradual transition for me, getting comfortable talking with management. That's one of the key, I'll say, indicators personally and maybe with others, that you have to be able to be comfortable with management, because a lot of the influence goes beyond influencing just one person. It means you have to be able to speak well in meetings. You have to be able to not be afraid of talking with management and comfortable walking into an office with a manager, even though they're busy, they might be, but you have to be able to get your point across in a respectful and a way that gets results. So it's a path. There's no, it's not like reading one page or a few bullets to get there. It's a path that people have to walk, and I think that may be why it's a struggle to condense a huge body of knowledge into a chapter that relates to a reliability book.
Well, chapter, come on, give me a break. I only get like 2, 3 pages. That would be a big section within this chapter.
Yes.
It is a big topic. Now, we didn't even mention, though, that when I think of reliability leadership, it also has a connotation for the product. You know, it's a positioning of your brand in the marketplace. The Consumer Reports annually reports on automobile reliability, passenger vehicle reliability, and truck reliability as a result of the surveys they do with their readers. And it's Toyota, you know, year after year after year is deemed their cars, the Camry and others, are the most reliable vehicles. Now, I don't know Toyota well enough to know if they deliberately create vehicles that are reliable for the brand promise that it makes. And now that they're in that position, now they have to maintain it. I know at HP, for printers and for calculators and for the old test and measurement devices that are now in Agilent, it was deliberate. We want to make a rock solid, very robust, very reliable product because it fills that position, that leadership role in perception of reliability and actual performance of reliability. That's a completely different leadership connotation than what we've been talking about with individuals.
Yeah, interesting. So in the HP example, they're setting a vision, they're setting a goal, basically rallying the whole organization around a goal to be a leader in reliability. And like you, I'm not sure if Toyota at the outset went about that or just went about making very good products and gradually they became the leader. I think it's the latter because I know looking back into the 70s and 80s, the Japanese automotive companies were not always at the forefront,
Oh,
and
no.
it's been a path that they walked. Because I remember a lot of stories from Deming that he would talk about that path, and that they did not have the easy road at the beginning. The products were not known for being reliable, and but they went about business and they went about making the changes, and gradually, evolutionary. They became leaders and then held that position. So it's probably the latter. Interesting point that you're making. I wonder, Fred, whether, actually, I don't wonder. It's a topic to discuss because I think I have my own views on it about whether leadership is an innate natural characteristic or whether it's a learned behavior, a learned set of skills. Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm taking a course through EDX, and I want to say University of Adelaide, or it's an Australian professor that's running the course on leadership, and he's exploring the many facets and the history of it, and so on. And my own experience going through the military academy is that leadership is not well defined. Excuse me. It's one of those, it's like art, you know it when you see it kind of thing. It's yet what I've read about and learned about recently and in my own experience, if you put five people in a room or a jury in the US legal system, we put a dozen people in a room and nobody's assigned the role of jury foreman, or in a team that we get together, nobody's assigned the leader. Yet somebody will always step up. Somebody will say, hey, if we're going to get this done, we need to do this, this, and this. And then the rest of the team looks at them and follows their lead. And leadership, to a large degree, is somebody that's willing to step up and say, hey, this is a direction. Let's take this path. Or here's a way to go. They may or may not be right. And they may be challenged. And there may be a change in leadership and within groups and so on. Yet, back to your question, though, Carl, is it innate? I think some people tend to take on that role easier. And some of it is because of their experience, their nature, their willingness to take on that task. Maybe it's frustration with the groups not making progress, not going somewhere. Yeah. But if that person walks out of the room, it's not part of that team anymore. Somebody else will become the leader.
If you look at anthropology as a subject, so it's humans and the animal kingdom, mm-hmm. That all have that characteristic, because dogs will have, get a bunch of dogs together and they'll pretty quickly figure out their hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And same with other animals, and same with humans, they'll figure out their hierarchy. And I agree with what you said, the person who takes on the leadership role does not necessarily correlate that they have the right actions. So right. I don't think leadership necessarily correlates with correctness.
Right.
One hopes it would, but it doesn't automatically. I think that at any given moment in time, that you can get a hierarchy of leadership. But I believe that people that are not at the top of that, that are more at the bottom half, by diligence and studying and practicing and pushing themselves outside of their comfort zone, can move up the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. That's what I've come to believe. It's not just an inherent natural quality. Yes, there's some of that, but I think that anybody can move themselves up in the skills of leadership if they work at it, study it, read about it, practice it, and especially go out of their comfort zone from time to time.
Yeah, it talks to the deliberate practice, where you're going to raise your hand and join your local school board, for example. It's a leadership role in the community. Just volunteer and do it. Take right. a stance on topics and it's a practice. You get feedback, and deliberate practice is at work or in your teamwork or wherever else is, talk to your manager and saying, hey, I'm going to lead this project to do an accelerated life test, and we've got four or five people doing to it. Would you judge, give me feedback on how I'm doing on the leadership role part, not just yes. the accelerated test part, but go out and actively. And now that's not always comfortable, right?
It's not.
It's not at all comfortable. And yeah. It certainly isn't. And getting feedback is, that's another whole section of this soft skills one, is how to receive mm-hmm. feedback. Yet, I agree with you, Carl, is that it's one of those things that just try it and practice and get feedback on how you're doing and what works and what doesn't work is a great way to learn. Reading a book or taking a course or things like that give you some frameworks to think about. I know a big part of my education in leadership was the stewardshipness of a leader. When I came out of the military, I was a battery captain, a battery commander, I should say. And I had a group of soldiers that I was the in charge of, basically. It was my company or my group. And I had to make all kinds of decisions and set direction and all kinds of things. When I transitioned to industry, I was a shift supervisor in a factory. And one of my employees showed up at work intoxicated or drunk. And so I sent him home. And my boss at the time, with no military experience, was, you need to fire him. Write it up and if he, you know, and start the procedure to fire him. And I says, the guy's got a problem. Why don't we send him to, you know, counseling or rehab, or, you know, make it available to him so that he can solve a problem and get on with his career. And she says, we don't deal with individuals, you know, their personal problems. They show up for work, they do work, we judge them on their performance at work, and that's it. And in the military, it was, you cared for the soldier and their family. And and that was a wake up for me, is that industry has leadership to get business objectives done. And then they, in some cases, I've seen it not done in other places, but they draw a line saying, no, we don't go there. We don't go into the home.
Yeah, I've seen it on both sides. And I prefer the side that says the manager or someone that you have that reports to, I prefer the side where you do have to, you do show an interest. And it's like belief in people. If you believe that's the right person, but he just has a problem, then it might be worth the investment,
right,
to coach that person through it or get them the right resources to get through their problem, as opposed to just weeding them out.
That's right. And so I'm still struggling with, Carl, though, is that there's these different, I think there's two or three different concepts we've brought in so far, is that there's the individual willingness to be the leader and set a direction, and whether other people in the group just look to you or you take it on yourself. I think I agree with you that you can learn how to do that. You can get better at doing that and just try it. It's not comfortable. I don't think anybody would disagree with that, yet it is something you can master. The other is just because somebody's a manager, they may or may not be a good leader or even a leader. They may have some position power, right?
That's right.
You know, a new CEO comes in, they get a grace period where, well, they're in charge, they're the CEO, right? We look to them for leadership. And if it doesn't come from them, we go find other leaders in the organization. And the CEO won't be as effective.
There's a little bit tongue-in-cheek in this, but you recall the Peter Principle, which says that people get promoted to the level of incompetence. And I don't think that's necessarily true in a lot of cases, but in some cases it might be.
It certainly is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I had a thought, first of all, I wanted to reemphasize something you had brought up and touched on, which is leadership is not the same as supervision.
Right.
The supervision is where you have direct reports and you got budget, you've got all the different aspects of supervising a group of people, which includes the feedback and the this and the that. Leadership, you can be a leader without having anybody report to you. And that's why I think reliability people, even if they're a reliability engineer, not just a reliability manager, reliability engineers can be leaders. Does not mean that they have people that report to them or people that depend on them for direction. It means that they influence. And so I just wanted to kind of reinforce that difference. The other thing I wanted to mention, and it's its own subject and own body of knowledge, is and I have a good friend that has written a book called The Courageous Follower, which basically describes the fact that not everybody can be leaders, and there are times that's appropriate to be a leader, and there are times when it's appropriate to be a follower. Mm-hmm. But follower does not mean blind adherence. You have your own code of ethics, your own integrity. It means understanding the big picture and supporting the big picture, but it also means stepping up and speaking out if you see it going off track.
Right. Or I'd say not even off track. I'd say is if there's an area that you can contribute on, or there's, you know, it's there's one thing to be a follower. We just sit in the room and take tasks and run off and go do those. It's another to work with the rest of the group to optimize those tasks and to get the best solution. It's like when we're doing FMEA and we have a brainstorm session, a good follower in those cases is an active participant in that activity.
Great point.
They don't just sit there and say, "Oh, wait, when is this done? And when do I get my task?"
Mm-hmm. Or when is it my turn to speak? Sometimes they need to speak up,
right?
And not wait. Yeah, great. Good point you make.
Well, I don't think I'm any closer to a short, concise chapter on this, but I think just talking it through a little bit, Carl, helps. I'll make some notes here real quick, and I think on the brand reliability part, I acknowledge that it's there. The difference between a manager and a leader, the position authority that people sometimes have, yet it's not a guarantee that they're a leader. And then spend more of it connecting it to what's more of the thrust of the entire chapter in our book is that a reliability engineer or reliability manager relies on their ability to influence. And your ability to lead is a factor in your ability to influence.
I think if we can also, and we've talked about this in the past, if we can also direct people to really good resources mm-hmm. where they can do self-study, if they've identified areas where they need to improve, let's say comfort zone right. or things, we may be able to have resources where they can learn more about stepping out of their comfort zone, maybe get some practice on doing it. I know that's a big part of it. For people, because if you stay in your comfort bubble, you will not become a good leader. A good leader almost always is working outside their comfort zone, at least initially.
That's right. Well, I can tell you after so many years, and it doesn't get any easier. It's still work.
Exactly. But the minute I said it, that at least initially, I said, well, you might as well be for the whole game. You have to be comfortable with being outside of your comfort zone.
That's right. Which is no easy task. It's like presenting. I'm still nervous before doing a presentation, yet I know what to expect. I know I've done it before and I survived. So I have that experience to rely on, yet I still have butterflies.
I think that's a good thing. I worry about the time that I'm taking on an important project or doing a tutorial or presentation where I don't have a certain amount of concern or queasiness or a little bit of nervousness. I think that's appropriate so that you can face what needs to be faced mm-hmm. as opposed to making assumptions where that you got this nailed without doing the work that's needed in the present moment.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, I'm sure we're going to come back and talk about this some more. If listeners, if you have some insights on this or some ideas or suggestions, I've got two ways you can help us out here. One is head over to reliability.fm and leave a comment or give us some feedback on the episode. And if you have some particular resources or references that would be helpful to frame this discussion that we're trying to write about, would be great. Another is head over to AscendoReliability.com and underneath ebooks, there's a main chapter heading or main menu topic. There's a drop down under ebooks. And our working title is Reliability Engineering Management. I think it even has draft in there someplace. But you'll be able to find the chapters that we've posted so far. And up until when we go live with the book and publish it, you're going to be able to find these chapters and look at the comments that others are leaving and leave your own comments and leave us what your insights are and let us know what you think. By the time this airs, we hope to have this chapter out. And so not only this section on leadership, there's sections on all kinds of different skills. And we'd really, really appreciate your feedback and insight so we can make it a much more useful text for you going forward. So with that, Carl, I think my head's still spinning. I'm going to have to stop and start taking some notes here. Definitely outside my comfort zone writing about this.
That's a good thing.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks much, Carl.
Thank you, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.